Welcome to the last episode of A Feast with Dragons.
I'm so excited, but it feels so surreal to be here at the last chapter of A Feast with Dragons. It's been a journey, and we finally made it. And this chapter could not be more perfect. At the end, the vibes are high.
Cheers again.
Cheers again.
Cheers again.
Two Yetis clanking.
We did Feast of Dragons on episode 310. That was the first one. I think this is 474.
It is.
And that was over five years ago.
It's
January 2016.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
Thank you to everyone who's listened with us the whole time. Holy shit. I did not know that when we started that reading order that it would be the longest stretch of anything that we've done so far on the podcast. High five.
It's exciting. It's been a lot of work and a lot of owns coming in and a lot of participation. And I feel like, I mean, you don't know what something is going to be like. And it's just crazy. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
What'd you think it was going to be like?
Amped right now. I don't know. I was so new to the podcast when we started doing A Feast of Dragons. So
yeah.
Now I'm not new to the podcast anymore. And this is a whole different vibe.
You got rackety, clackety old bones now.
Now I'm not so afraid anymore. And so it's very exciting to be here at the end.
Tell
of
us your real
dance.
Thoughts about Marine.
I'll tell anybody about anything now. And it's just pretty wild to kind of be at that point. So I've been so amped for so long to record this episode.
Thanks again for everyone who's listened. And for anyone who's new, who's jumped on, some of you have emailed, some of you have written to us on Twitter. But a special thank you to everyone who's been with us for the last 5 years on that and since the beginning, too. But booking
really
this
special.
Particular one is cool. I'm drinking a Baja Blast Zero, not a sponsor.
I wish it was.
I wouldn't accept their money.
You wouldn't?
No, yes, I would.
You're such a liar.
I would.
We get to the end of A Feast of Dragons and it's finally the sponsorships are going to come on in.
No kidding. Well, they're going to have nothing to sponsor now. What's the whole point of this thing?
It's a mystery. Mm-hmm. We'll have to find out what happens next.
I've been looking forward to this for a long time. For a really long time. I told you, I was talking to you today about this and I'll share an anecdote of the story that I've shared before that on my first read through of A Feast for Crows and A Dance with Dragons, I did it really quickly because I was waiting until a certain point in the way we were analyzing chapters for the podcast before, where the show crossed a certain threshold and everyone that sort of verified my unsullied status at the time were like, okay, now it's time for you. You can go ahead and release the floodgates. And we'd also just finished The Storm of Swords. Mm-hmm. And so I read them very quickly. And at one point, I was doing a Dance with Dragons audiobook and zoning out on a lot of it. But hearing Roy Dartrace's voice talk about the part where Dany is going through her memory and hearing the voices of all of these people talking to her really made an impression on me. Mm-hmm. And it's felt like putting Daenerys Tin at the end of the reading order was going to be an interesting way to end the story versus what the epilogue would have felt like. And I was really looking forward to that moment finally coming.
It's like a moment of reminiscing with Daenerys as she thinks back on kind of everything that she's been through up until this point. And then you can't help but also feel, like you're saying, remembering when you listened to it for the first time or read it for the first time, or when we jumped into this reading order for the first time. You can't help but kind of, not that our experience is anywhere near anything that Daenerys is going through, but it's nice to kind of have that atmospheric, reminiscing kind of tone set in this chapter for us to also be talking about at the end of the reading order. And so it kind of worked out really nicely.
Yeah, and the epilogue has a similar feeling of sort of atmospheric nostalgia for a place, even though it's a place that we are really familiar with versus this dying plain mm-hmm. landscape that she's in for this whole chapter. But it has that same sort of feeling, mm-hmm. but a lot more exposition.
Right. And this chapter.
Obviously, Kevin's talking to people.
Exactly.
And Varys has that really long monologue, and this is only her.
That's what I was going to say. I think that what sets this chapter apart is that this is her own internal monologue as she's flashing in and out of consciousness, in and out of these dreams, in and out of these different sicknesses. I mean, she's going through a lot in this chapter. And so we're just getting, she talks out loud maybe twice, three times potentially. But
I don't know, I didn't count.
She's going in and out of consciousness for a variety of different reasons. We're getting her inner monologue as she's kind of on this, it's almost like this rebirth type of journey, it feels like to me, that she's out there in nature communing with something, herself, her situation, to then rededicate herself to whatever kind of comes next. And so it's a wild experience to be in her head without her saying anything out loud.
Yeah, for the whole chapter. Mm-hmm. No distractions, no other characters to sort of drag her down into their own thought processes. And she's really likable.
And it's been a while. Sense. We've been talking about Daenerys for a long time. And we've been speculating for a long time on the podcast. Everybody's kind of wondering where she is and if she's going to come back and all of those kinds of things. And then, bam, finally, everything in Meereen is ramping up. And we've been with Barristan for so long and been in the weeds with those battles as they're starting to come to fruition, and to finally be in the head of the person that is on everybody's mind.
They're all thinking about her, and she's thinking about them too, but
she is.
It's funny to know, it's kind of sweet to know that she wanted to get back to them the whole time, at least.
Right.
But Drogon wouldn't take her back.
She's like mostly wanted to go back to them, though.
Right, you're
she's
right.
She's also like, I could also kind of just stay here forever.
Yeah.
I don't blame her so much for that.
It's not so bad because I can fly.
Right, but they are on her mind. It feels like she kind of goes back and forth there on what she wants. And there's this whole overarching theme of her trying to get home. And this idea of kind of what that is, where that is, who that is.
That's her thing.
Is so many different
default
things in this chapter. Yeah.
She doesn't, it's like her. It's like how Drogon's nature is to hunt and defeat himself. Her nature has always been, I need to get home.
Right, but what is that? Where
the
is
red
her
door,
home?
The red waste.
Dario's not her home? Seems like it in this chapter.
I'll make it to the Skaz, Don, and Dario will be there to find me.
It's kind of sweet.
For Dario, if he only knew. Can you imagine? He has no idea. So you really liked it? I was going to ask earlier, what do you think is the best chapter to end
in all,
the book with?
Oh.
Yeah, in all.
What's your favorite chapter?
I liked ending it with this one.
This
versus
chapter.
Versus the epilogue. This,
it's like you're saying, I loved it too. I just feel like the energy of this chapter is so nostalgic and is so specific and is so
contemplative
and it's very
personal,
like transcendent almost. And so I really like ending the series on that. This is it. And in the podcast we've already done the sample chapter for Winds of Winter, and so even more so than just us ending our reading order with this, we're also ending this is the last
a song
chapter.
Of Ice and Fire-ish.
Yeah, this is the last chapter you're going to record on very specifically. And so I think that that the nature of this chapter just lends itself very well for that.
I've been really looking forward to this discussion because of that. Because it is kind of bookending a lot of different things. And just when I was going through reading it today, I felt I could really feel that through the pages. And I was looking forward to feeling that feeling. And we were talking earlier about what it's like to be in the middle of your life, but also while in the middle of your life, to be in the middle of a really good book, one that you don't want to put down, one that when you sink into it, it sincerely transports you to a different dimension. And you could be going through something in your life that's boring. You could be like I was when I was a kid, reading all those different books that I love so much and feeling like I was in a pool, a deep pool, like drowning in awesome stories, but not like quicksand, but good quicksand. Does that make sense?
Definitely.
Good quicksand. And in my adulthood, there's less of that. But I'm sure that the option for that to happen is still out there. If I guess, had more time or dedicated more time to constantly being exposed to new stories that might potentially make me feel that way. I was really looking forward to feeling that way with this chapter today, and holy crap, it delivered. So it had a lot of weight on it, is basically what I'm saying, because it was bookending this section of the show, of our discussions that we're putting out on the podcast, but also just of all the Song of Ice and Fire chapters up until this point. And it being one away from the very end of A Dance of Dragons, which for everyone else is basically the same. It's who aren't making a podcast. It's the same exact thing. It's at the very end of the published material. I feel like he really knew what he was doing. And I think having the snow glittering into King's Landing is also a pretty poetic way to sort of wrap it up as well. So I say that they're probably equal in their substance in that way. And that, that monologue from Varys really, really drives in a more and even more of a deadly flourish of how cool this book is. So it makes sense that Dany wasn't the sole focus at the very, very end, but she was still the very end POV proper.
Right. But she's the main character of A Song of Ice and Fire isn't Daenerys. It's Westeros, or you know what I mean? I guess maybe Planetos. And so I think it makes sense that you kind of end on that more pulled out vision of what is happening than just inside one person's head. But I think for our sake, because we're digging into this, it works really well. And I'm trying to find, here it is right now. Kind of, you're talking about that metaphor, or not metaphor, but snow falling on King's Landing. It's not a metaphor. It's literally falling on King's Landing at the end of the epilogue. Mm-hmm. But she has some similar feelings about winter arriving and about things changing. As she's going through this chapter, as she's deep in this grass that is higher than her head, and when she was riding her horse many moons ago, she was above it, and now she's deep in it. And she thinks to herself, "The grass is paler than she remembered, a wan and sticky green on the verge of going yellow. After that would come brown. The grass is dying." Before that, she says, "Though she walked through a green kingdom, it was not the deep, rich green of summer. Even here, autumn made its presence felt, and winter could not be far behind." And then a couple paragraphs later, she talks about the sky was before the first time she had seen the Dothraki Sea. The sky was blue, the grass is green, and I was full of hope. And now here we are near the end of the chapter when winter is arriving, the grass is dying. It's different than she remembers, and soon it will turn brown.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing that's happening in King's Landing and everywhere else where the elements are really coming into play.
Mm-hmm.
Are coming into play here. Yeah.
I love that too. Made me feel like the safety of being so far away, or really the disconnectedness from the rest of the storyline that we've been really shoved into all the way through all the books, really, up until A Dance of Dragons. Not like this, especially with Tyrion's POV also being in Essos. Made me feel like who I thought were separated from what's happening with the White Walkers is definitely less so. And also the mention of Viserys's storytelling about the greatest wall, the largest wall in the world, also really
with the ants and
connected,
the
exactly connected me as well. The ants in that downtrodden village, old little town of hovels. Do you know what a hovel is?
Absolutely not.
So do you get the feeling of the word whenever you read it?
I guess. I don't.
What do you do in that case when you read it and you're like, it's a hovel?
When was that word used in context of the little village that she
was
in?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Those little houses called hovels, right?
Okay, sure.
So that's what it is. It's just a shitty house.
Yeah.
It's just a poorly built house with like a thatched roof and like sticks and
made
stuff.
Out of like mud and dirt.
Yeah, like straw.
Stone.
Wherever they and old grass, like the same thing that she would have made that hat out of.
Right.
Anyway, I'm glad that George had the opportunity to put that in there because it's rich in that it I don't know, it's like looking at a painting where something is sort of falling apart. Kind of depressing. I don't know what that place was necessarily, what that little village was. I don't know why it was there. I don't know why those ants were there. I don't know. I understand finding a wall to sleep against, a little shelter. I don't know why she needed to find a shelter to sleep against. Maybe he needed to give her a place to sleep so she could have some dreams.
Mm-hmm.
But why couldn't she just lay down in the grass? Maybe that was less cool. Less cool to the story. You know, it just seems like you can't accidentally put a little village.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Vias to Tororo when she was headed to Qarth. That made sense. There was backstory, and that backstory and that narrative in the moment fed into the current state of her and the Dothraki as they were dealing with the thirst and with the hunger and with just the general shittiness going across the Red Waste trying to find a place to go. Here, she was already on a path. She was never going to stay here. There was no ghosts. There was only ants. And of course, the recollection of the Wall of Westeros. So that seems to be the purpose to me. I think that the ants are probably key. I think that the depressing nature of it being a hovel, this place being in disrepair, maybe of them being poorly built, quickly built, something that wouldn't last over the elements, over with the elements over time. Maybe there's some kind of subtext there that's important. But I think that thinking, Viserys thinking about the wall, or her thinking about Viserys thinking about the wall, Viserys in the dream, and
such an obvious vision and visit from Quaithe as part of all of that.
Yeah, can't remember if that's when she had the Quaithe dream or not. Maybe it was, I can't remember if it was all in the same, was it on the same
the
night?
The ants, when she's leaned against there, is when she sees Quaithe kind of glittering in the stars as
a mask of starlight.
Lion King.
Oh, yeah.
When
you know in Lion King, whenever the clouds go all the way out, it says the word sex?
Yeah.
Isn't that messed up? I wonder why. Anyway.
But that moment reminded me of when he's looking at his dad up and he's like, be strong, my son. Yeah. Or what? I don't remember what he says.
Remember who you are?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Remember.
Is that what it is?
I think so. But
sex.
Yeah, and then it says that. But the music swells and it's this really magical moment. And then literally pretty much the same exact thing happens when Quaithe tells her literally as I look for it really
the prophetic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got them all written down too.
Remember who you are, Danny the Dragon Snow.
Same thing.
Do you?
Same
it's
thing.
The same thing.
That's oh, cool.
But so while she's kind of sitting there, I think to play off your point a little bit, like I think all of those things and places are there also to kind of symbolize just the passage of time in general for people and that like things come and go and fade and are disrepair and time is just a constant moving kind of thing. That's what I was thinking about. And then as she's leaned up against and those ants are biting her, but she doesn't even notice as she's deep in whatever hallucination she's
having.
Okay,
yeah. I like that too.
Then she wakes up in the morning and she's like, wait a second. Why am I covered in all these bugs? I have so many bites. When in under normal circumstances, you lay down on the grass.
You wake right up.
Yeah, immediately are understanding something that's going on. So that's kind of what I was interpreting that as.
Or
as I was thinking about Mufasa.
She was sleeping. Mufasa. Ooh, say it again. Mufasa. Ooh. She was leaning up against the wall. Or she was leaning against the wall because it was the wall, symbolizing the wall, and the ants were the White Walkers.
Sure. I wouldn't count against that either, necessarily. It's such a random thing. It's such a random thing for her to be thinking about the wall at this point in time as she's here so far away. I don't know. It felt kind of random.
My point.
Yeah.
So it all sort of came together. I don't remember how we originally got on that train of thought. It doesn't really matter. But Viserys thinking about the wall and the ants potentially being, I think that you're probably more right. But
I think they're both right.
Yeah, I think that you're right about that. I think that they are. You are both right. I wonder what the other side of the symbolism for the town is then. Like maybe that's what Westeros could become. Maybe that's what everything could become, even as far as out here. But it's already become that. So how much would it really matter to anyone?
It probably mattered to somebody. I'm not sure.
Yeah, but they're dead now.
Exactly. So will everybody else be? And all these other people that she is thinking of who have gone on or who haven't and who are just like out there somewhere that she's missing, like Jorah and her old bear. But her brother's gone and Khal Drogo's gone and her innocence of youth is gone because now I wanted to read. We get in this chapter, again, so many of the classic Daenerys, if I keep walking, if I look back, I'm lost. Which I just wanted to give a little shout out to. But pretty early on in the chapter, I loved this paragraph where she says, where she's kind of thinking about how she feels whole when she's up in the sky and she just loves being here because she feels like she's finally living.
Yeah.
But she needs to return to her duty and she thinks it was time though. A girl might spend her life at play, but she was a woman grown, a queen, a wife, a mother to thousands. Her children had need of her. Drogon had bent before the whip, and so must she. She had to don her crown again and return to her ebon bench with the arms of her noble husband, Hisdar of the Tepid Kisses, which made me LOL out loud when we were reading. But I just feel like this paragraph in specific just really encapsulates the whole mood of the chapter of this. I'm no longer a girl. And she kind of has that conversation later in the chapter with quote unquote Jorah, hallucination Jorah, where she's like, I went to Marine. I was so tired. I didn't want to go on to Westeros. I'm just a kid.
I wanted to plant flowers.
Yeah. Trees. But now she's kind of shedding that. She's now a woman grown. She's now a queen. It's time for her to bend to the will and do what she's meant to be doing, which is to conquer and to be a leader and a...
But she hadn't been doing that is the thing.
Right, exactly.
It's so sharp of her and so charitable of George to finally break it down and say it after having a book, a complete book of it. But doing what she was doing for the whole book in Marine was bending to the whip.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about all those people. It's just not. Like all the things that she wanted to change, that was all about maintaining the kingdom in her own way. She shouldn't have stopped there, is what the whole point of it basically is, and what she's finding out through her conversation with
Jorah. Which is, Jorah. I think it's so interesting that that's coming from her thought of Jorah. Well, Jorah is the one aspect. Who's like part of the vision that's giving her these thoughts, which I think is really interesting.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, that's the person that she knows. It's so funny when you think about how she was thinking about Skahas and Redneck.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we don't think about them really, but she was. That those are the people that's in her life. And it's very humbling to know that. And it's probably humbling if they knew that as well. But that's how it is. And so the impression that she has of Jorah is the person that's sort of talking back to her and her subconscious about where her life could have gone if she had made different decisions at the time that they knew each other and at the time when he was helping her come to those conclusions.
Right. So long ago, how many books ago was it that she decided to stay in Marine and that she was going to try her hand there? I liked in that exchange as well how she realizes, she feels Jorah behind her, but she won't turn around because she's like, if I turn around, he's not going to be there and the whole thing is going to dissipate.
Yeah.
It's kind of like those moments when you're dreaming deeply.
Yeah. And you're about to wake up.
And you don't. You're like, I don't know. But it's such a very self-aware kind of moment. And we'll talk a little bit more about like Quaithe's potential role in all of this. And
you don't want to talk about Quaithe now?
Well, we can talk about it now, but I didn't know if you had more things on that. I didn't want to
about Jorah necessarily,
or that moment, or you were reading quotes.
It's all a jumble, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I've really liked this chapter a lot, and I feel very strongly about all the different things that George wanted to put in here because of how it sort of relates to where the story could go for Dany based on her making her mind up and knowing more about herself. And so I feel like George represented this idea of her working through things that she had seemingly been avoiding,
mm-hmm.
not coming to terms with, really.
Mm-hmm.
And it got to the point where she finally had to do it.
These people who have broken her heart, really, when you think about it, like her brother and Jorah and losing so many things and people.
So many things and people. they broke her heart, but she broke theirs too.
For sure. She's not innocent in any of that kind of thing. But I think that it just reminds me of something Taylor Swift posted on her Instagram today about her re-recording of Red. how Taylor Swift talked today on her Instagram about how like re-recording this album she made in the midst of all of this heartbreak, going back to it, I don't know, almost a decade later and revisiting it was very cathartic for her. Now she's able to like really let go and like finally like move forward from all those things that had happened in that period of her life. I'm going to butcher this. So in a lot of cultures, there is this idea before you reach adulthood, there's this idea of like going on some sort of journey.
A rite of passage.
Some sort of rite of passage, whether it is literally out in nature or in woods, or like sometimes those include having these sort of visions and dreams, and I don't want to say hallucinations necessarily, but
in some cases,
like there's just a wide variety of these types of experiences. And I think that, and then you come out the other side and you decide what you're going to do.
Yeah.
And this is 1,000% that for Daenerys, and maybe re-recording Red is like what that was for Taylor Swift.
Oh, interesting.
Anyway,
why Red specifically?
I don't know. We don't need to keep talking about Taylor Swift.
Basically, she's tripping.
Whether it's on her own from these berries that she's eating or from malnourishment or from Quaithe manipulating her. I think it's a little bit of both probably through here. But she is tripping.
Mm. She's been alone for a long time. Mm-hmm. She's really thirsty. She's really hungry. She's feeling really, you know how you like to take showers? She hasn't done that in a while. And her hair got all burnt off. And the pads of her hand have been burnt and they're raw. But her attitude is very good about it, which is, I love Dani for that. She's a pretty cool person. Her feet are in the same condition. She's super hungry. She's super thirsty. She's super alone. And the only thing that she has to comfort her is a large dragon who is not soft in any way.
Or is it, and is a little volatile.
And he doesn't listen to her. And she doesn't necessarily know how to communicate with him in a very good way. But they have a decent relationship. His kisses wouldn't be tepid, at least. But she's made up her mind. You know, she's been in this place, Dragonstone, the new Dragonstone. And she's been in her own world. And then she kicked that sheep's head and it rolled and it left her lair. She made this decision to sort of rejoin the world. She walks out and she feels the earth warm between her toes. And that was kind of like embracing, all right, I'm going to let the ball roll, let the path move forward. I'm going to see what happens. And that's kind of the same thing that happens whenever you decide to go on an experience of drugs.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, okay, I'm going to do this. And not everyone makes the same decision. A lot of times you have no idea what you're getting yourself into. Sometimes you do. You think you do. Sometimes you know exactly what to expect. It's every human being is different. Everything's going to be a different thing for everyone. But I think the course of a story, it all follows a similar sort of narrative through line. And for her, it's this chapter. And the element of, we say, trippiness, of the weird stuff, of your thoughts, of people talking to you, manifesting from your environment, those are things that George R. R. Martin creatively and artistically applied to the scenario. I don't think that she took drugs. I don't think that a glass candle is necessarily manipulating her thought patterns. I think that we're sort of culturally aware of certain aspects of hallucinogens messing with our brains in certain ways, or widening our senses to the environment in certain ways. And so we're all seeing this, and everyone in the community and all your friends who've read the books talk about this chapter and say, when Dani was tripping out in the desert, that's definitely what was happening. But artistically, I feel like what George was doing was using aspects of that from real life where you're basically unable to hide from the truth of your own experience, where your subconscious is speaking back to you in a way that you necessarily can't avoid. Use that to help progress Dani's character without her having to partake in a sacrament or drinking nightshade or being in the House of the Undying and experiencing a sort of living version of that. It was more set on through a kind of loneliness, pain, dirtiness, and trauma all at the same time, hunger, all of that.
Definitely.
Some of the aspects of the trippiness include the waving grass, and that there's that line. I have to find it. It's so funny. It's like, George, you crafty little Keebler elf, you. She fumbled in the water, found a stone the size of her fist, pulled it from the mud. It was a poor weapon, but better than an empty hand. From the corner of her eye, Dani saw the grass move again off to her right. The grass swayed and bowed low, as if before a king, but no king appeared to her. The world was green and empty. The world was green and silent. The world was yellow, dying. I should get up, she told herself. I have to walk. I have to follow the stream. Really good writing right there. That sort of paranoia, she sees it move out of the corner of her eye. And then the awareness of the environment sets in. But in this state of wiggliness, it's not just the place that she sees. It's the full scale. She sees it for what it is. She's like, oh my God, this world is dying around me. And us as the reader, we can see it in a bunch of different ways. We can see it as winter is definitely coming to this place. We can see it as a situation that Dani really needs to get out of. We can see it as her tripping out in the desert. It all really means the same thing, which is essentially what it is. It's all those things at once. But in her current state, she's seeing it for really what it is. And it's totally different than the Dothraki that rides up.
Mm-hmm.
He's just living his life. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where he lives. He's doing his thing. But for her and what she's going through, it's a totally different thing. And she's lived a different life, and so it applies to her in a different way. But it's cool to be in God mode, and it's cool to have an author write such a vivid palette of images for us to sort of coast through. It must be really hard to do. Just drawing a picture, it's like, well, I need to come up with a concept that's artistic, a concept that means something, and that is visually pleasing, and that I can paint like a portrait of someone posing. It's technically mesmerizing, but also the pose, the choice of the framing, the choice of the colors and the expression of this person, whether it's a real person or not, all saying the same thing. That's what he's doing by writing this. And it was a really good job. It's so simple, you know, the little trickle of water and old Dragonstone coming up out of the grass like a fist. This place was perfectly constructed for her to come to. And I really felt the safety of it and also the need for her to leave. It was just, I'm thinking about Drogon being there in the pile of jagged razor rocks, like with his deep shuddering breath, and her just being there, being out of her wits, you know, after what she'd gone through, constantly going up in the sky and flying and having a certain kind of day and just being like, what the fuck is going on? Until she's ready to finally leave. That's a really weird place to be in A Song of Ice and Fire. When you think about all the other stuff that we've gone through, it was a pretty risky thing to do, but it had to happen. It's written by someone who's really aware of what's going on in the world, it seems. And that's the reason why it's so... It really lands for all of us. I can't quite find the words when something connects so well to masses of people, but whatever that vocab term is, I think this really proves that he's on that track.
It's like it's a very relatable experience in a very unrelatable scenario to all of us, you know, as a reader.
Like we can imagine ourselves in that situation.
For sure. Like I think all of us have kind of been through journeys like this a little bit. So
I've never been through anything like
really?
That. Yeah, no.
Well, the only thing I can relate it to is like backpacking through a long
journey. And it's really,
in the woods,
you're really tired.
And you like really have to
take a shit.
Sure. But that same kind of thought of, well, I just have to keep going kind
right.
of thing.
Right.
So much less dire.
Yeah.
The weight is so much less.
Mm-hmm. You're at a line at a rental car place.
Yeah, exactly. If I look back, I'm lost.
Yeah.
But I think the whole thing, so there was another, actually, that's not really a trippy moment. It was just kind of a cool moment.
Grass talking to her. It's like, actually, it is. Like, when she wakes up from the dream and she wants to, she continues the convo that she was having with Jorah.
Right.
With the grass.
And what was the moment where she's thinking about how she... Who was it that she was talking to when she was thinking about how she's blood of the dragon? And they're like, well, actually, you're not because you tied your dragons up. So
after she was talking to Viserys, the grass started talking back to her after the dream, basically.
Well, and she talks to the grass,
yeah.
I think twice or something.
Which makes total
chapter.
Sense in
Definitely.
This situation. I mean, if it's talking back to you.
So you don't think that Quaithe has anything really to do with anything that's happening in this chapter?
No, and I don't know if Quaithe was glass candling into this dream. It's totally possible. But with everything else that's going on, it doesn't really seem likely to me.
Yeah, because I know that that's kind of an idea or that Quaithe is manipulating some things along the way. And so I didn't know if maybe it would apply here. And I just had... I kind of am in the same boat as you. Like, I'm not 100% sure about that.
We were talking
that,
to Yolk Boy and Lady Gwen. They talked about Quaithe going into Dany's dreams and how she appeared. You know, those scenes with her and Marine, for example, I very sillily assumed that she had scaled the wall like a ninja. But it made a lot more sense that she was using old technology from Ashai and other places, and tunneling into her thoughts. And doing so that way. A lot easier.
For sure.
Right? So she's doing... they were like, aha, it's coming soon. You're going to see it in Danny Tennant. And I was so excited with her mask being made of starlight and going into Danny's dream. It was so short. She didn't say a lot. She reiterated the old prophecies again.
Well, I just didn't know if maybe any of these things with Viserys or Jorah had anything to do with her.
I don't know about that. To go north, you must journey south. To reach west, you must go east. To go forward, you must go back. To touch the light, you must pass beneath the shadow. So does that mean you need to go all the way east across the shy by the shadow to go across the circumference of Planetos to make it back to the western shores through Casterly Rock?
Perhaps.
To reach the Westerlands and reach King's Landing by foot? No. But the Dothraki would enjoy the trek across Essos, probably.
Right, that's probably more their style.
They probably would not like what they found in the Shire, but maybe there's some kind of a portal there. Remember who you are, Daenerys. The stars whispered in a woman's voice. The dragons know. Do you?
Literally Lion King vibes.
I don't know, Quaithe. I don't know if that's you.
For sure it is.
I don't know if that's
1,000,000% it is.
Glass candling in?
Yeah, 1,000,000%.
But she dreamed a lot of stuff.
Sure. I don't know about Quaithe's participation in the rest of this chapter, but 1,000,000% in my mind, that moment has to do with her because of the whole ant thing. She's literally passed out on a wall.
Ooh, yeah.
She doesn't remember anything, and she wakes up covered in ants. So she's like very much having a deep experience, more so than in the other ones where she seems to be much more aware of kind of, I mean, the Quaithe dream lasts 15 seconds in our reading of it.
Sure,
and the other two were these conversations back and forth, but
vivid.
That she seemed to have a little bit more control over.
Yeah.
But this one, she's...
She was like, Quaithe, is that you?
Yeah.
Are you there?
And then she wakes up. Let me read it because she wakes up. That's not when she wakes up in blood. That's after Viserys.
Wakes up in blood.
Classic.
This chapter is so good.
The next morning she woke stiff and sore, aching with ants crawling on her arms and legs and face. Okay. When she realized what they were, she kicked aside the stalks of dry brown grass that served as her bed and blanket and struggled to her feet. She had bites all over her, little red bumps, itchy and inflamed. Where did all the ants come from? Danny brushed them from her arms and legs and belly. She ran a hand across her stubby scalp where her hair had burned away and felt more ants on her head and one crawling down the back of her neck. She knocked them off and crushed them under her bare feet. There were so many. It turned out there was an anthill on the other side of the wall. Da, 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 da. But so
like the White Walkers coming out of an anthill.
Yeah, and then that whole thing. I just think that when it comes to
that whole thing.
the whole main plot of A Song of Ice and Fire.
Oh yeah, that thing.
I just think when it comes to any sort of like dream manipulation or what Quaithe is or isn't doing or why Quaithe is doing it, why in whatever way Quaithe is doing it and why Daenerys and why in this way, whatever. But I think specifically here, just because of the circumstance of her, to me it seems like the most obvious instance of it.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense that she was
everything
able to
else,
go through that.
I don't know.
Curious to go back and revisit other moments with Quaithe entering her dreams and to see if she slept through anything else tumultuous. Anything loud or strange.
Mm-hmm. Going on in the background. I'm not sure. I didn't.
Or if a bunch of bugs were around her after she did that. Crickets.
So gross. I can't.
You can't what?
Cicada season. I do not want to talk about bugs and crickets and flying.
Would you ever
any
eat a
no,
cicada?
Absolutely not.
What does Quaithe want Danny to do?
Well, that's exactly was the question I was going to ask you, but didn't because you didn't think Quaithe had anything to do with it at first, but maybe you have changed your mind because of my expert reasoning.
Well, even if she was just dreaming of Quaithe, just reminding herself of the other stuff that Quaithe has talked to her about,
right.
Why does this person from a shy, I mean, obviously, because there's some obvious things. I was going to say, why does this person from a shy care so much about what Danny's doing mm-hmm. and what Danny thinks about certain topics, how Danny feels about certain topics? And I was going to answer myself and say she's interested in the balance of power. She's interested in dragons returning to the earth. She's interested in who wins, who loses, and feels like Danny could be a major player.
So then what?
So then I'm going to manipulate some way.
Right.
somehow and try to make things a little bit easier for this person that I want to win? Maybe.
I don't know about making
it easier. What does she want?
I don't know about making it easier because you think back, when was it when basically Quaithe is trying to tell Daenerys something and Dany's like, literally, WTF A-G-O-T. Are you trying to tell me? Because it's so obscure, yeah. You know? So
Sally that mounts the world.
Yeah. I kind of had those same questions. It's like, okay, well, what do you... I know you have to subtly move things. You can't just burst into Daenerys' dreams and say, I need you to go to XYZ place because it's going to be helpful for you and for me and for everything in general. But I wrote down the same exact questions. And I understand, like, that interest. Daenerys is powerful with her dragons. She's one of the last of the Targaryens. She's, like, there's a lot of lore surrounding that. Mm-hmm. But then... What's your plan? Kind of thing. I don't have answers for that because I
What do you think?
Because we don't know a lot about Quaithe necessarily.
Or Ashai. I'm going to pull up the map and we're just going to look at Ashai and be like, what could they want?
So is it like a Varys scenario?
Well, I think that the realm needs me.
But why does every person have to have something behind them that's...
Because no one's
more
just
in charge
hanging.
Of anything. Of course not.
Few people are just hanging.
Of course not. But it's like, well, then every single major player has like the slippery.
Danny's just trying to get home.
Person that we don't know about.
North of the landmass of Olthos, at the tip of the bottom of the Shadowlands. Look this up. Look up a world map of Planetos, everyone, because you need to see this. This is important. All the way east of Essos, which is as east as you can go. Wink, wink. Ashai, by the Shadowlands.
But we're not going to go to Ashai.
No, we're not going to go there, but this person
it's
is
so
potentially channeling into our girl's dreams.
I know.
And it's messed up, if you ask me. All right, it's hard to get here. First off, you don't want to go close to Sothorios. You don't want... No, because there are brindled men who probably are seafaring slash krakens slash other sorts of probably swarms of dangerous mosquitoes if you get any close to these shorelines.
Definitely. Lots of bugs.
Great Morak, this island land mass that is at the north side of the Cinnamon Straits, which is – you with me, everyone? Which is outside of Sothorios, all right? Is what is the landmass that is below Qarth? Qarth is on the other continent. It's on Essos. There's a small channel between Qarth and this Great Morak, and then there's a string of islands, and then there's Sothorios. So basically, there's two channels, kind of like when you're trying to get into the Slaver's Bay, to the Jade Sea from the Summer Sea. Anyway, that's the only way to get. That's the only way to get. To Ashai.
It's so far out of the way.
So this is where Euron went. I'm assuming, see, you can't, it's hard. My point is it's hard to get through Qarth, the northern channel. It's hard to get through the southern channel. It's hard to get there is what I'm trying to say. You can't pass through Qarth easily. They've got that place blocked off. They want to know who you are, what you're doing. They're going to want money from you. They're going to want to rape whatever women that you have, probably. That's pretty brutal, but it seems like that's definitely a worry that we all would have in that situation. And the same could be said for going close to Sothorios. You could see a basilisk from the ship. You don't want to ever look there. Ever look on the beach. You don't want to do that. The Jade Sea seems like it's wide open once you get there, but who knows what it's like, honestly. I don't know anything about E.T. We've heard about it a couple times. I don't know anything about Lang, and no one does.
But Quaithe has nothing to do with the Red God.
In the show, she did. In the show... Her mask had the same sort of polygonal figures.
Is that because she's from Ashai?
Yes, I assume so.
Right, so that was the connection and not necessarily because she's related to the R'hllor. Red God.
You know, that's probably right. That's probably right. They wore similar shapes. Subtext. I don't know if it was subtext that was gleaned from them reading on their own or something that was hinted by GRM, but he did work on the show for the first four seasons, so it's probably a mixture of both. And it also is probably mostly connected to the fact that they were both from Ashai. But again, we don't know a lot, and I think that we're probably going to end up knowing more before the series is out, but that's why we're talking about it now, because at this point in the story, it's all speculation, and that's where like the conversation, we could talk about the grass talking to her.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was cool. But this is what we don't know about. I honestly don't know.
And also my question
or have a good idea.
My question is what it always is, well, well, we don't know, but do we need to care enough to know? Is it going to matter enough to know? Is Quaithe moving Dany enough in a direction to be able to actually manipulate the situation?
Yeah. Right now she is.
So then
she's
what?
Listening to her. She is listening to
what? And to go where? To go back to Westeros? So that seems to be kind of the like the main narrative of all these peeps are people who are trying to get her to Westeros. Obviously, Viserys and Jorah, number one fanboys of her getting there. And so if Quaithe is involved in those hallucinations or visions or conversations, then that plays into this idea of pushing Daenerys back towards Westeros, away from this place that she's currently calling home, into her ancestral home.
Yeah.
And her rightful duty as the heir to the Iron Throne, or to take the Iron Throne.
The only thing that she has to do, it seems like Dany was always trying to go home. That's her thing. You know, her thing isn't necessarily being a queen or running a kingdom. It's
but home is so many different things.
I'm trying to get somewhere.
Like at one point, she references home as the place where her husband and her lover are. Yeah, you know,
I mean, that doesn't have to be home. That could be a vacation spot.
Ideally, maybe
with a large place. It's like a estate where no one runs into each other. And maybe, you know, honestly, maybe they run into each other.
Maybe. Seems to be a little bit of a different situation in these plays.
Well, for her, it's definitely different. She's the mother of dragons. She can do whatever the fuck she
Everyone's
wants.
Everyone's like kind of cool with it.
Dario's swords are hanging on the wall.
And he's
beside her bed.
Right. And he brags about it everywhere he goes. So it's not really a subtle thing. It's not like a secret that's happening, going on. But
Dario's swords are on the wall beside her bed. So that is what it is.
It's so interesting. I felt this chapter, there's so many moments when she's just reflecting on, I bet Dario's going to come save me now. Or I think that Dario's going to be there. Or kind of thinking about him as looking to him with strength and all that kind of
stuff.
I bet Dario's probably released now at this point. It kind of reminded me of a little bit like Cersei thinking a lot about Jaime right before she's through everything that she goes through. And she's like, I bet Jaime is going to come. Now he's probably on his way.
Oh, yeah,
he's probably gonna be there too, you know, soon.
Yeah, he'll stop them.
Yeah, and I don't know necessarily about
I don't either. If there's I'm not any a real, woman, if I, what is, it, is, it, is that what you guys do?
I mean, I've never been in that situation necessarily, but and I don't know if there's any parallels between the two, more so than two women going through these major circumstances. Reflecting on this idea that they could potentially be saved and then they kind of have to do it on their own. That's probably, that might be as far as it goes, but it just kind of reminded me of that a little bit. And it just, all of these things that Daenerys clings on to in her youth, like this, that feels like a very youthful thing. All of her reminiscing and dreaming of Dario is like a very young, youthful thing
we're
to
just,
do.
We are young, though. We
no,
just,
I know.
But we got older, but you know? Like, we're young people that got older. So, and she's going through some really hard stuff. So I asked, is that what y'all do? But to me, it does make sense. And a man wrote this. So if he who was aware enough to make such an artistic flourish earlier that we were talking about also wrote this part of it, and it makes sense to him. It makes sense to me. He understood it. He was able to glean it, write it into the story. Maybe that just means that it's signaling that she really is going through hardship, legitimate hardship. And so she's thinking that Dario will meet her at the Skahazadon Dawn because she just needs someone.
Yeah,
this is actually legitimately tough.
I don't think she like truly believes that he's going to meet her there, but it's kind of one of those.
It's like Jaime.
It's like a daydream almost. I think Cersei believes a little bit more legitimately that Jaime is on his way. To me, I read it kind of as
she's dumber than Daenerys, so that makes sense.
I think that it's more of like part of her hallucinations and he's a comfort to her and she misses him. And so it's one of those things where wouldn't it be magical if he could just like ride up on his horse and save me now? But
yeah. Yeah. No, that makes sense. And I wish someone would do that in this sense. The only person that's there for Dany is Drogon. And I don't know if you got this, the sense of this and when you were reading, but to me it seemed like the sort of metaphor behind the scenario that she was having with Drogon was like someone being in a, not necessarily a bad relationship, but just one that they were getting enough to survive and that was really hard to leave, you know?
Kind of like a codependency almost then.
I suppose, yeah. I don't really, I'm not really on the up and up on what that word means.
The idea that you are dependent on each other for things and you're not, there's
He doesn't depend on her.
The thing that doesn't tie you together is the thing that should tie you together potentially in any sort of relationship is like desire or love or like trust, companionship, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But in a codependent situation, as I understand it, you rely on each other just because of your situation or because you've bonded through some sort of like trauma or bonded through some sort of something where you rely on each other for that specific reason only and not because you have ties in other, like maybe more, less traumatic and more romantic ways. I don't know. I'm not an expert, but.
It doesn't seem codependent to me because Drogon doesn't depend on her for anything. And also, she's not getting any kind of protection or anything from him, just his scraps of meat.
Right. That's probably not the right word at all. But speaking of her.
It's like loose companionship and the feeling of someone being around.
And but her trying to.
But like also maybe like really fun experiences because he flies with her all the time.
And her trying to understand him better so that she can utilize him. So we get to the end of the chapter, and I think you're talking about what he can do for her. We get to the end of the chapter when she is found.
Yeah.
But she's with Drogon.
Wait a second. Why are their names so similar?
Are they connected enough for Drogon to do something to save her, potentially? I know that we know kind of from the show in a sort of different way that she ends up going back to Vyas Dothrak. So will she do that in the TVs, in the book series? Hard to say. But will Drogon protect her? Will he just fly away and be like, well, see you later? But he seems to kind of show up when she needs
him
to.
Yeah.
And so they've got, but he's still a wild beast. And where's that moment where she talks about how the Dragon Lords of Old Valyria, I wrote it down, I didn't write down the exact quote, but the Dragon Lords of Old Valyria had controlled their mounts with binding spells and sorcerous horns. Daenerys made do with a word and a whip, which maybe kind of the horns thing is interesting.
But, yeah, no, for sure.
So she's kind of still figuring out with that relationship. She doesn't have anybody to tell her other than these old stories that she heard from her brother.
Right, and these stories are old, and there's been some progress. Plus, she's a really special person, and so it seems like she's able to do what they needed to do with trickery or actual magic. I'm not sure. Definitely want to talk about that before we're done today. With just her ability and presence. And so she's doing
it
with words and a whip, and it worked. And maybe it's all Drogon. Maybe you do need magic. I don't know. But it seems like it seems like that's not true from this chapter. But who knows? Again, it could still be Drogon. But it seemed in that moment, whenever she yelled out for him, I think, the thing is, there's an author writing this story. And so he's marshaling the spirits of this environment. He's the mouse in Fantasia. You know, he's the wizard. He's making all of this real for us. And so whenever she reaches the end of her realizations, whenever she reaches the end of her conversations with her closest counterparts, and she's making it through some of the most difficult themes that she's yet to really process and really come to a conclusion that is not bad. I need to be a Marine and sit on this bench and just make deals with people who want to feed me crickets. That's not what you needed to be doing.
Crickets.
Sure. Whenever she decides to really think about all those things and go through it, what does she hear? And it's like you just took a bunch of mushrooms. What's the next thing? Well, the next thing is the next part of the story. You kick the sheep's head off the hill. You decided to go out into the world. You're in the world. You've made that leap into the vision quest, like you said. You're doing the really difficult thing. What's next? And she's gotten through the difficult thing, kind of. That's sort of what GRM's version of all of this is. She's gotten through the difficult thing. And at the end of that difficult, I mean, it's right after. I mean, and it's like clockwork. It's like you've earned it. Okay. Well, are you ready for the next moment? So the universe, George R. R. Martin, feeds it to her. And that's through the sound of a bell.
Mm-hmm.
Tinkle, tinkle,
a familiar
tinkle.
Sound.
Tinkle, tinkle, tinkle. And so from the universe, spits out the next thing. And it's a Dothraki scout looking around.
Go forward, you must go back.
With an oiled braid. He's like, what's going on here? There's a dragon. So she figured out a lot of things. She grew personally. She figured out a lot of things. And because of that, I mean, she's really underfed. She's naked, basically naked, basically been naked this whole time.
Bleeding.
bleeding, shitting herself stupid, probably enough to like lift herself off the ground. And she's not even that hydrated. She's dehydrated. So, I mean, she's really getting squeezed out like a sponge. Luckily, we have a lot of reserves. We're like 90-something% water, which seems like a lot, but.
You can only go 3 days without drinking water.
Really?
That's like the old wives' tale kind of thing. I don't know the science behind it, but they always say you got 3 days in you before you die.
Well, the master of this universe decided to put a trickle of a stream that was hope and sustenance the size of her arm. She's gone so far off the way, and she's affected so many things. And the rite of passage is so difficult that it was as wide as her arm, but it was still there. It was guiding her. And it was a source of something that would keep her alive while also making herself shit herself, which, I mean, that is literally the channeling of what is into art. That is channeling it into a situation. Like, George stuck it all down into a little, like, typewriter. The essence of the universe channeled into a scenario. She gets through it. It definitely could have been more varied. It could have been more than a chapter. There could be a whole book on it, but he wanted to make it a chapter long. She talked to the most important people. They said some stuff to her. She realized some things. And then at the end of it, tinkle, tinkle, tinkle. Here's the next thing. It's the guy looking around.
Somebody that you know.
Something that you know. And it's also hope. But the best part is it's not someone that's going to help you.
Right.
It's someone that you're going to control. Because you've decided that you're going to use fire and blood. You're not weak. You're fucking badass.
Right.
You're the master of your environment. And you're this little girl breaking stereotypes, breaking tropes, breaking your skin and not giving a fuck, not complaining, constantly taking the right idea, spinning it positively, moving forward in the situation. Like Aziz was saying in the last episode, not a lot of characters like her. Sort of like unrealistically awesome. But realistic in the sense that she still likes a lot of the stuff that we like. She hears the tinkles, the Dothraki rider comes, and then she screams out for Drogon. And like I said, the universe was made by the guy who was writing the book. So it's not about, did Drogon hear her? Is there a psychic link between Drogon? And I know I often go to the reproducible technical elements of the story to sort of explain other things that are mysterious to me. But this is less mysterious to me. I can chalk this up to Drogon could just hear her, right? Or maybe there is a psychic link. I honestly don't know. Doesn't seem likely that the writer imprints on the dragon and only the dragon knows about this psychic link. Doesn't seem likely. Maybe it is a thing. Sometimes I feel like my dog can read my mind.
It's more similar to a warging type relationship.
Yeah, that's except she doesn't warg.
No, but they have some of the same.
Maybe the dragon can warg.
Maybe, but I'm that's aside. Keep going on your point. But
so let's say he hears her, right? The thing of it is, she's made it through the rite of passage of having these truthful conversations and coming to a point. And that point is fire and blood. Dragons don't plant trees. That's who she is.
It's interesting to me that she comes to this major conclusion through all of this, as you're describing, and the person on the other side is somebody who we haven't seen or heard from since book one. I had to go back and double check to the last time we saw him. He's the quote-unquote savior who's not going to save her. She's been asking and searching as she's like going through all of this. Let me follow the water. I'll find the way. Kind of keep following the water, find the way. And it's this guy who she knew at the way back beginning of her journey, at the start of it, is now somebody who's here. Somebody who she like has beef with, basically.
Yeah.
And that's the one to find her.
Someone who's going to try to use a technicality to fuck her over at the very least.
Yeah.
Or the skill at arms or the amount of power. Just not a friend.
Right.
Not someone who's actually going to be cool to her.
Especially when we spend so much time in this chapter and she's reminiscing so fondly about her time with the Dothraki and being here with her sun and stars. And she was pregnant and happy and rose-colored glasses on the whole situation.
Going to bed in his arms with his baby in my belly.
Right. And then she, the person to kind of come across as somebody who was part of that, but is somebody who they don't have a good relationship, and she promised to avenge him or whatever, essentially. And so I couldn't help but thinking of like that whole thing of to go forward, you have to go backwards. And for her to, she's made that step and decision to finally push forward. And what's on the other side is her past in the best way that it can be represented, because so many of these other people either aren't available or dead or not enough of a representation of her kind of at the beginning, like at the simplest form. So I'm curious to kind of see how that ends up playing out. So before we started recording, I was watching some clips from the TV series because I couldn't remember exactly how all of this played out specifically. And it was so unsubtle how it's all kind of played out in the show. But I'm really curious to
cut to Danny's face smiling when Drogon pops over the hill.
Exactly. And the whole Jorah thing, searching for her in the grass with Dario. Yeah. And they find her ring and he's like, oh, Khaleesi. It's kind of silly. But anyway, I'm looking forward to kind of seeing, well, then what happens with Daenerys? I mean, does she then progress on to some time with the Dothraki here? Is she going to be recruiting them essentially to join her army? Are they going to try to push her into Vyas Dothrak kind of the way that they did in Game of Thrones? Is she going to escape and then head back to Meereen? Is she going to be like desperado to get back there? Is she going to get back in time for whatever battle is going to happen? Is she going to see that, or is she going to meet everybody afterwards? There's so many questions about her involvement, and now she's here stuck. Drogon's not going to help her necessarily, probably.
Maybe he will, though.
But maybe he will help her. And I don't know.
I think it's about her. It's like everything before. And she needed to be having these conversations with herself always. But it's hard when you got all these other people around you. And there's so many other comforts that you can sink into. Like, she wanted to sink into a Meereen at the top of the Great Pyramid.
In her bath.
And they're scrubbing her back. And it's really nice because you can't reach it yourself. It totally makes sense to me. But you get stuck out here for long enough and you get bored enough with from flying around and your silent counterpart, you're going to have to think about some things. And she thinks about a lot of those. And what happens right after she figures out a lot of it? She's like, I don't even need this whip. She knows. And it's that we're in an environment where our brains are interfacing with everything around us, but also our physical body is too. And your brain's not always as caught up to where it could be eventually, but you're still having to be here
especially
and to do stuff.
Dealing with malnourishment and
especially
the physical things that
for
she's
sure. But
with.
Even just in the real world, when everything's okay, not everything is going to be up to speed. So you're going to be in Meereen for a while.
But when she figures out
that she basically is in control of her own thoughts, she's able to communicate with Drogon, I think, in a way that's a lot more efficient. She doesn't need the whip anymore.
And
she's riding him without anything.
They share, I like at the very end of this chapter when she slides off his back and they share meat together.
Jumps off of his back and is eating smoking meat with him from the dead horse. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the thing of it. Whenever she goes back to any kind of society, around any other kind of people, we're going to see her as Dany. And we're going to be reading point of view chapters where people are freaked the fuck out by her. Not because she's doing something that's freaky, but because she is wild to them. She's already been wild. But after this, she is not going to care what anyone has ever thought ever. It's not going to mean anything to her. There are going to be people that have lived in houses and in shelters for most of their life, for all of their life mainly. I mean, this is a pretty rough environment, both in Westeros and Essos, because we're still in horse days, buggy days. Everyone breaks their arm. They might die days, depending on, you know, how close you are to a maester to set the bone, et cetera. But to them, she's going to be wild, absolutely wild.
Some people argue potentially that this is the beginning of Daenerys' descent into madness. And kind of the beginning of her
that makes sense.
Leaning into the disease that her father, that she's inheriting
to
from
everyone
her
else, maybe a disease.
And so how does she interface with somebody
she needs to
like call?
Oh,
what?
She's going to
Jocko. How does she interface with somebody who the last time he saw her, she was such a wildly different person than she is now. Like you're saying, she's hard now.
Well, she looks ridiculous right now. And she looks like she's been on a bender. I mean, she's on a dragon, standing beside a dragon. So it's a little different. And the dragon's huge. You think that's what it is?
Maybe. I don't know. I was going to ask you about it, but either
just
way.
Just a subtle little drop right there. And so it's ambiguous what exactly she's going to be regarded as in that situation. But she looks unstable for sure. Her hair's all melted off.
She is unstable. She doesn't look unstable.
She is unstable, sure, but she's actually pretty stable. Get her well fed and she'll figure it out.
For sure, but kind of in this moment, she's not.
I think her descent into madness in that scenario is just everyone not seeing it like she sees it. How can they? They have not been through this. They don't know. And I know that that's a dangerous sort of like idea to put out because there's more other people than her, but it is what it is. So can she maintain her position? I mean, she can maintain her life if she was trying not to continue to gain power over other people.
She can maintain her position after this.
Maybe not forever. And that might be when she hears those bells again.
Mm, interesting.
Yeah. I don't want that to be the case. For Daenerys in this story, I don't want that to be George's lesson, is that like she is unique and she is a wonderful character with resilience and a positive spin and laughing while this is happening, having small light observations, someone that you would want to hang out with because their spirit is legitimately good and they're not constantly looking around and they're not constantly scheming and plotting and trying to screw other people over that they call friends, someone that would be a legitimate person to hang out with. Loses because there's too many of the other people. That would really suck. And it might be the lesson of the world that we're living in. It might be that. And so a salve to that, to skip forward to our analysis at the end of A Dream of Spring, could be to not try to take over the world or Westeros, to like play it cool and to know, to understand, maybe before you get to the end of the lesson, when they kill you, that maybe you shouldn't try to take over everyone and that maybe you could just let it play out. Or you could do it better. You can anticipate these sorts of things and do it better, which is what she's been trying to do in Meereen. We're seeing that as failing. But at the same time, she really hasn't been herself. So there's just a lot of layers to this onion. There's a lot of layers to it.
I feel
it.
Like she peeled a lot back through this.
For sure. And she did it in an environment that was super bare, super simple. And it was all her. There was no other characters. And I don't know, the intimacy with Drogon was really neat. Just that sort of binary nature of how their brains work together.
I just think it was the perfect backdrop. You already talked about this a lot at the beginning of the episode, but it's the perfect backdrop and the perfect way for him, George, to communicate all of these big lessons that she needed to learn about herself. And a lot of the times those big lessons come when everybody is out of your head. You know, and you don't have other people's opinions drowning you out.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And it's just her and her traumas of everything that she's kind of gone through. So something else that kind of, I can't find it. So I've been kind of scrolling through to kind of find it. But there's
your notes or the book.
The book. There's a moment that also I felt like really signifies this more transition into this fire and blood kind of situation. Is she's thinking back to that little girl that got burned,
mm-hmm.
and she can't remember her name anymore.
Yeah.
And Daenerys has to decide what is important to her. And I think that she, I mean, especially like you look at this whole conversation she's having with Viserys. I need to scroll to it. But so much of it's like, this was all stuff that you wanted to do. This was your vision. This was your own, your demise is your own doing. Mm-hmm. I want to do it the way I'm going to do it. It's kind of like gleaning from that conversation that I haven't read in a couple hours, but it just plays into this larger thing of like this rebirth of her transition into adulthood, quote unquote.
It's like she has been doing stuff that she thinks someone that's really good
that she's supposed to be doing.
Yeah, but not just like that, but like someone who in her position that is a really good version of it would do. Someone who's really morally correct and like wants to help the downtrodden and not let people suffer, because she knows, duh, that she doesn't need to let that happen, because there's no need to let that happen. There's other people that get control, like Kleos the Great. Is that his name? Cletus? And they automatically start screwing people over, enslaving people. They get 13 slaves that are all women of a certain age. All the typical stuff. Boring. And then there's Danny, who is equally boring to those people, who's like, I'm good.
Right.
I will do the good thing. This world is just not really made for that, it seems. Not really made for the idealistic.
We've seen that time and time again in A Song of Ice and Fire. We talked about that in our last couple episodes. Like, we talked about with Aziz and Sean. I mean,
so her idealism has just led to her creating more issues, basically, mm-hmm. because it's stagnant and she's not being true to herself. And she doesn't really care about it deep down. And that's why it hasn't really worked.
Exactly.
Yikes. So she cares about getting her way, really. She cares about doing it right to her way. I don't think it has to be fire and blood, but she's a Targaryen. It might as well be.
Fits into her MO. She's got dragons. Nobody else does.
Yeah, she's got dragons, and she's smarter than everyone. She's smarter than everyone. And a better hang, seemingly. Tyrion's pretty awesome as far as being bored with people.
Tyrion...
Go on.
He doesn't have dragons.
Right, but
that's
my...
That's kind of like a trump card.
That's true, but my point was he gets bored with people pretty fast. Kind of has control of the situation, even though he's got no nose and he's heads and shoulders and torsos smaller than everyone in a world where physicality is way more important than the one that we live in, just for survivability, not to mention just vibes. Mm-hmm. And he still is just bored with everyone and can handle it all and is rarely truly entertained. Dany is the same thing, though. But she has dragons. And everyone's trying to appease her, so maybe it'd be different if she was in a different environment. But it's less about who they are. It's not that they're impressive themselves. It's that the world put them in the situation where they would become these kinds of people. They're those kinds of people because any of us would be those kinds of people if we were put in that situation. Because that's the certain way that we were shaped by the world. Mm-hmm. And that's how we came out.
Because you're just trying to survive.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's why it's fire and blood for her. And yeah, she has dragons, so she might as well use them. It's just kind of a shame, though, because it's negative. You don't want that to be the thing that you do, to kill people and to take their shit. You don't want that to be the thing that you do, which is, I think she's been really trying to resist it.
Well,
that's why she's trying to make Meereen a safe place with no bad things happening, except the fighting pits and except slavery right outside the walls. And these little deals I'm making with Hisdar because other people are dying. It's just riding the wave of that thin line of chaos just exploding and not having it explode.
And trying to fight against your own.
Yeah,
name.
But it seems like she was directly trying to resist it in a completely opposite way. And it's like Viserys says, I know I said we were going to read those passages, maybe we should now, but it's like Viserys said, I would have let the world know truly what our name meant. If I had a dragon, I would have taught the world the meaning of our words.
He was not the guy, though. He was not the right guy for the job.
I'm going to read this. Viserys looked just as he had the last time she'd seen him. His mouth was twisted in anguish, his hair was burnt, and his face was black and smoking where the molten gold had run down across his brow and cheeks and into his eyes. You are dead, Dany said. Murdered. Though his lips never moved, somehow she could hear his voice whispering in her ear. You never mourned me, sister. It is hard to die unmourned. I loved you once. Once, he said so bitterly it made her shudder. You were supposed to be my wife, to bear me children with silver hair and purple eyes, to keep the blood of the dragon pure. I took care of you. I taught you who you were. I fed you. I sold our mother's crown to keep you fed. You hurt me. You frightened me. Only when you woke the dragon, I loved you. You sold me. You betrayed me. No, you were the betrayer. You turned against me, against your own blood. They cheated me. Your horsey husband and his stinking savages. They were cheats and liars. They promised me a golden crown and gave me this. He touched the molten gold that was creeping down his face and smoke arose from his finger. You could have had your crown, Dany told him. My sun and stars would have won it for you if only you had waited. I waited long enough. I waited my whole life. I was their king, their rightful king. They laughed at me. You should have stayed in Pentos with Magister Illyrio. Khal Drogo had to present me to the Dosh Kaleem, but you did not have to ride with us. That was your choice, your mistake. Do you want to wake the dragon, you stupid little whore? Drogo's Khalasar was mine. I bought them from him. 100,000 screamers. I pay for them with your maidenhead. You never understood. Dothraki do not buy and sell. They give gifts and receive them. If you had waited, I did wait for my crown, for my throne, for you, all those years, and all I ever got was a pot of molten gold. Why did they give the dragon's eggs to you? They should have been mine. If I'd had a dragon, I would have taught the world the meaning of our words. Viserys began to laugh until his jaw fell away from his face, smoking, and blood and molten gold ran from his mouth. A lot about the Dothraki, particularly in that.
Mm-hmm.
Dosh Kaleen, there's been a lot of that in this chapter mm-hmm. overall, talking about the way that the Great Khalasar that Drogo had split up. Obviously, that's some impressionable stuff at the end of this book. And probably the deepest that we get into Daenerys in all of these books. And she's probably half of the main character, her and Jon, probably something like that. Sorry, Sansa. And this is a, we get it. But again, it's Dothraki stuff. Seems like a hint. Dosh Kaleen.
That's what I'm saying. It's like going, she's back to her roots. Back to square one.
Yeah, and you want it to be something else. You didn't want it to be Meereen. And you didn't want her to have to get back with the Dothraki. But that's who she started with. You know, like that's who she is. You didn't want her to be thinking about Skaz and Resnik whenever she's revisiting all of the people that she misses. But that's who she misses. You know, right after she was thinking about all the people that she misses, a wolf howls in the distance.
What do you think of that?
What do you think of it?
That was right before the Quaithe moment. Was when the wolf howls. The sound made her feel sad and lonely, but no less hungry. The moon rose above the grasslands, and Dany slipped into a restless sleep. And then Quaithe shows up. All I read when I read that was, to me, that was like a callback, and this might be completely wrong, but it just made me think of Jon. Like, the two, like their stories are starting to come together. I know that Jon isn't a Stark, necessarily. Well, I mean, sort of, but...
He's a Stark, and a Targaryen.
Yeah. But to me, that was a callback of... And we got that moment at the wall, like, pretty soon after that. Mm-hmm. And so that's all I could think about, is just their stories are... quickly intertwining.
Yeah.
And so
it's not an accident.
Yeah.
Just like the deeper exploration, re-exploration of Dothraki customs. It's a little sloppy in how it's so obvious, you know? She's like, and then they did, like, they broke off this way. She sort of reviews their splitting up of the call very particularly. And again, the wall. The mention of the wall, Viserys' mention of the wall, even though he does it in jest when he's like, and Viserys took credit for it as if he had built it himself, which that's hilarious of him talking about right. it like that, like right. it's his kingdom. Like, they say it's the biggest wall in the world. Yeah. But so he makes it enjoyable, but still really stuck in there for a reason. And the wolf howl, I tried to, can you read the part that happened right after the wolf howl again? It made her feel no less sad and lonely.
Or it made her feel sad and lonely, but no less hungry.
I don't know if that bodes well, then, for Jono and her relationship, necessarily. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but again...
She's still hungry, but more sad and lonely.
Yeah, but hungry.
I mean, yeah.
That's kind of good. That's actually kind of good. So they're going to be...
She's no less hungry. Like, she's still hungry.
Yeah, but hunger's good. Yeah.
But Jon couldn't fulfill any of that hunger.
No. Yeah, but... Yeah. No, you don't want to be full. You don't want to be full, right? Like, you always want to be hungry.
But right? He couldn't help her.
No, he can help her stay hungry.
No, that's not what this is.
No, okay. No, I don't mean like that. I mean like
the metaphor of it.
They're like killing shit, you know? Like, maybe not people, but just figuratively. Not good. Okay.
No.
Well, that makes sense. I think we're reading too much. Yeah, I'm like, I'm not that good at this. we're probably reading too much into it anyway.
I don't know.
But it was in there for a reason.
No, I agree. Yeah, 100% it was in there for a reason. And I think, like, to me, my mind went to Jon. I don't know what you thought
same,
of.
Exact
the same thing.
Yeah. Same yeah. exact thing. It just...
It's hard not to...
It seems like that's what's coming next. Dothraki stuff. Wall stuff. And Jon stuff.
Mm-hmm.
From this. And choosing to be...
Fire
fully,
and blood.
Yeah. Fire and blood and fully in control of herself. And not this wasting my time with stuff that is not important to me. And that locking up my dragons was me not being who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And that was obviously a bad decision. and that it was for a good reason, but it was for a good reason that I don't care about. Not that I, one that I really don't care about. I was just trying to make some the best of something that really doesn't mean that much to me. These are all things that we can relate to, people. These are all things that, like Drogon flying away from the city and her being okay with dying and feeling the heat of the city. I mean, that's a sort of a metaphorical, artistic rendering of a situation and a feeling that is that can be stretched from a whole, like you can look at it as a, leaving something or experiencing something that's really dangerous, that's also really good. You're abandoning something of, you're abandoning safety and comfort to do something that's really reckless and risky, but it's worth it because it's great for the moment. Things like that. That's a, it's like a, it's a moving portrait. It's a moving painting of that being realized in an art form. And I guess it's important for Dany to understand why it's worth living her life and not just being a puppet for what she thinks is a good idea.
And for her to come to that on her own, in her own way, on her own. Not because somebody told her necessarily.
She's just trying to control everything too much, huh?
Yeah.
Hmm.
This was such a, I mean, this is such a great chapter.
Yeah, really. And for her to hop on Drogon like that confidently and be like, and what a way to end it. Instead of her being, it's no other character would be like this in this situation. Maybe Jon. But not like this, not with this much style, to be in such a state of, this sucks, I might die, there's no food, there's no water, there's no people, I'm about to get captured, basically. Or maybe not, because they're scared of the dragon. So maybe she could have made it out. But eventually they're going to find me because they're around. Instead of hiding, basically, all these possibilities, what happened was she lets the dude right away. She calls for Drogon. She gets on his back. She chases the bastard down. She finds all the Dothraki. She's like, there they are. They kill one of them. They eat their horse. She slides off the back, eats their horse. And then she stands there and waits for them to ride up to her. Holy shit.
It's like I've been saying this whole time. It's the shit. It's a rebirth. It's the next chapter in Daenerys' journey. And we have... a long time for it to come to fruition. But this is the before Daenerys 10 and the after Daenerys 10.
Yeah.
Dany.
Yeah. And we have the little hints of where things might go, the things that were obviously mentioned, like we were saying.
Right.
And whatever the math is of this encounter with the Dothraki, do I kill them? Do they capture her? It doesn't seem like that's going to be a thing because Drogon's standing right there beside her.
But she goes, and I don't want to put too much weight into the show, but she goes through.
It seems like she would go there on her own to get more Dothraki.
She's going to go there in some way, shape, or form. But like,
maybe it'll take time, though, you know.
That's the problem. But I don't know. I'm curious. We'll see.
It'll take a lot of time. She knows that Daario, for example, is in the hands of the Yunkai. Things like that. That I feel like she's going to want to intervene as fast as possible. So maybe she flies to Vyas Dothrak and she frees the crones and she gets more help.
Because she's only
gets more soldiers.
She's only been here 2 or 3 days and all of the stuff that's been happening.
That's it?
That's all. Yeah.
How do you know that?
Because it says in here that she's only been here a handful of days.
Okay.
Let me scroll through and find it specifically, but she hasn't been here for... months.
No, not months.
She's been here only a handful of days. It's only been a handful of days since all of this went down.
Okay.
So she's got other stuff. She's not going to then turn around. Like, they miss her in Meereen.
Yeah.
I might be totally misreading. And
it's been about, I think it's 17 chapters in the book originally.
So correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm going to find it, but I have to...
The days? I'm not sure about that.
I might not be able
to find
it.
You could be right.
But
tell us on Twitter.
It's on here somewhere that she's only been here a little bit of time.
Yeah. So she goes to Vyas Dothrak. She frees the crones. She gets more Dothraki to be soldiers in her Khalasar.
In some way, shape, or form.
Or she just kills all these people and goes to... Why would she go to Vyas Dothrak? I think that she thinks the crone situation is not cool. I think that she's But again, that's doing other stuff that doesn't seem important to her.
I kind of like the idea that she gets captured, like she does in the show. Hmm. After going through all of this, coming out the other side, then now she's a prisoner.
Interesting.
Being forced into a place where she does not want to go, but she was supposed to have gone there.
It is more stylistic and interesting for people to go through hard stuff than to just have their way for the whole book. Even if it's difficult to have her way because she's having to go to some kind of war to do stuff. I don't know. But this it's perfectly ambiguous. I'm just imagining the scout standing there wordless, being in his own daze.
Because they're
going to
recognize her immediately, you know?
Yeah.
It's not like she's a rando.
That's true.
Pretty recognizable.
Especially because she's standing beside a huge dragon.
Yeah, exactly.
God, man, what a crazy... We did not talk about it from their perspective.
I know.
Full circle for them. She had eggs. Some of them saw the dragon's hatch, maybe.
It was like I was saying earlier.
Whoa, the ones
she
that
was
stayed,
much
stuck
younger.
Around.
Yeah, and now they've potentially heard rumors. Everybody's been hearing rumors.
Yeah, they've heard about her. Man. Yeah, that's going to be pretty neat. I really like it. Really, really like it. How this ended for her. I'm glad that she got out of Marine forcibly with a dragon.
Yeah.
All right, let's get out of here. Let's get out of this fighting pit. Let's get out of that situation. And she's invulnerable to fire, legitimately now. It's not just the weird spell that was cast in the moment with Miri, death can pay for life situation. Because she was in the middle of an inferno, a twisting inferno of bodies, of people trying to kill Drogon, and all of her hair got burned off again, and she was able to fly away. So she's invulnerable to fire. I think that comes all the way back around to, I was curious what you thought about the horn, and I forget how it was described. The dragon lords of Old Valyria had controlled their mounts with binding spells and sorcerous horns. It's true that she's invulnerable to fire, and it wasn't just, I mean, I could say it wasn't just blood magic in that moment. Well, if there's blood magic, then this shit's probably real, too.
The horns and things?
Probably.
Well, it made me think of Euron.
And there's a shadow baby.
Too. Oh,
what made you think of it?
Well, the horn.
Yeah. Why not Vic? You got something against Vic?
Yeah,
he's
true.
Got a horn,
sorry,
too.
Right.
It's
sorry.
That same horn.
My bad.
Why are you thinking of Euron?
Because
he's the sexier one.
Go back and listen to any sort of episode that we've done on either of them.
Okay.
No, it just made me think about, well, two things. One, people were using horns before, and like the drop of them, we haven't like heard a lot about them in history necessarily. And so the name drop of them being used to me, it just was a
big hint.
Big hint.
Another big hint.
Yeah, you know, in my mind.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I was kind of thinking about, it reminds me of when we were mentioning Viserys, but this idea that like all the things that Daenerys knows about dragons and dragon lore, a lot of it has come from stories that are potentially exaggerated, or it's been a really long time, and so it's like history, so it's not necessarily like real, good, solid, necessary advice.
That
and
makes
so
sense.
That could potentially be just children's tales of how they were controlled by horns and magic, because it seemed to be that way, when in reality, maybe they were being controlled in the same way that Daenerys is controlling them.
Right,
because
the ones that were riding it probably weren't the Valyrians that were riding dragons. It was everyone else talking about them.
Right, exactly. So I think there's like two sides there. Mm. A, it's like a shout out of the horns are real. Victarion is going to actually be able to use them, and that's something's going to happen. Or B,
there you go.
Kind of playing into the other side of this is all just plays into the lore of the Targaryen Empire and all that kind of thing.
Right.
Dragon riders.
And it's ambiguous. So what happens next with Vic in the Battle of Fire and with Euron is also ambiguous. If you were a Targaryen in that situation or any other kind of dragon lord, and you had to use and you didn't have to use these, and people were writing stories about you in like textbooks, wouldn't you want people to think it was all your power and not horns and spells? Or did they say that they used horns and spells to detract from their power?
Well, it's hard to say because there's been so much time that's passed and so much history. And history gets rewritten all the time and exaggerated and conflated. And people tell stories like, I saw somebody doing something, and then next thing you know, it has turned into coming completely different.
Yeah. Do you think that George knew about all these layers when he was writing it? Because that is so deep
to
be able
percent.
to channel all of those different possibilities, not just the possibilities of whether the horn exists or not and whether we don't know for sure, but of what you were just saying, of what were you just saying?
How stories get made, how history changes, how people say one thing, just kind of playing into this idea that what Daenerys knows about dragons may or may not be actually what is true about dragons, just because so much time has passed. So how reliable can all of that be?
Right. But she is invulnerable to fire. So there's got to be something weird there. I don't know if it was a perma spell put on by Miri. That's something that we could ask Marwyn, because he probably knows. But I feel like, I don't know. I was going to say, I feel like he might be doing more than hanging out in his hippie abode if he knew that kind of ability like exists in the world. But wouldn't he just be the kind of person that we were talking about before that is just off on his own and not trying to take over the world so he doesn't get ganged up on by people? Not even by the other maesters. The other archmaesters. Not getting killed by them directly, it seems. He's got enough of a reason to be protected. I guess he's not coming after him. He knows what's going on. Probably.
With glass candles?
Just with the world. I mean,
does he know what stuff because of that?
Oh, yeah. I think so. But with his connection to Miri, and her being such an interesting character who's done so many things, who's done so few things that were so important, I think that we should connect those dots and know the potential power and mystery surrounding someone like Marwyn, who's someone we haven't talked about. He'll probably get stopped by Euron. And if he doesn't, then we'll have to cut him into this conversation of Dany moving forward, because he'll probably make it there then on the Cinnamon Wind. More than likely, if he makes it through that. I guess, what would you call it? I forget what it's called when ships are in a formation blocking people off, but of your own.
A blockade?
Yeah, if he makes it through there, then he'll probably make it in a decent amount of time. And if she goes to fight Dothrak and we are reaching Meereen around like the half of Winds, or God forbid the end of Winds. The battle, like the remnants of the Battle of Fire.
Still at the end of Winds?
Like, it's the remnants of the end of it, and then the falling action from who controls the city and what. Reznak, Skahaz, et cetera. Marwyn arrives. Dany arrives from being at Vyas with a ton of Dothraki. They take all the Carthian ships. A Dream of Spring is Daenerys making it to Westeros, and that sounds about right.
So what, the battle?
Handling
the
White Walkers.
The battle ensues, and then Tyrion hooks up with Barristan and co. somehow?
Yeah. And maybe he's like a prisoner or something.
And so Tyrion's already ruling, basically.
No,
by
maybe
the time
he's a prisoner.
Daenerys gets back.
If Daenerys isn't there, they're not giving Tyrion anything to stand on. Unless
but
he
what
does.
If they think Daenerys is dead if it's been that long?
Well, then they're probably going to ship him off to King's Landing or something. I don't know. They're not going to like him because he threatens them. Unless he helps them before they get a chance to do something bad to him, they're not going to do him any favors.
I like the idea, though, of Daenerys and Marwyn kind of arriving at the same-ish time back to Meereen.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Because I don't know what he's going to do.
Or Marwyn arrives and tells them where Daenerys is.
Oh, and that Daenerys isn't gone, isn't dead.
But I don't know if he has a spare candle. This is all a bunch of weird headcanon-y. Obviously, that's what we're doing. But I'm like, this is a bad idea, but, we're just talking.
That's the point. Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah.
I swear if we're still hanging in Meereen at the end of Winds of Winter, if I'm going to spend 20 years of my life talking about how we're in Meereen, I've already spent a decade stuck here. Plus,
yeah.
No, more, because, She was well into Meereen. I've been talking about this stupid battle for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, if we're still talking about that battle after Winds of Winter for the next 10 years.
We could read something else.
This doesn't seem like a good idea either.
I don't think that they'll be in Meereen at the end of Winds, but I think that they'll be in Meereen a considerable amount through it.
Probably. Like
they'll
probably the
shove
repercussions,
off. They'll shove off.
Yeah, the repercussions of everything is too high. It's not. I can't. We can't expect to just like. Daenerys is not even in Meereen right now, and she's not going back to Meereen right now.
Right.
She's getting captured, essentially. So
he could jump. He could jump, and she could. There could be, you know, she could have all those italics talking about, and then that's when I did this.
No, and that's
I
not
felt,
good.
And I felt that that was the way that
that's
I should
not
have done
good.
That.
That's not good. That's boring. That all like the exposition of all.
Yeah,
her
but do you want to have to go through it?
I'd rather do that.
You want to see her next moment. You want to see her deal with these, the Khalasar, or not just she has them at her back?
Yeah, because think about the first time you read Feast, wondering what everybody else was dealing with,
mm-hmm.
like, but kind of getting it in the background. And you're like, this is lame that I don't know what's going on with everybody else.
Like who?
Like Daenerys.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Right, but it's kind of different, though, because I'm talking about, do you want to see her have the conversation with the call and then for her to unleash fire and blood? Or do you want to see the calls on a stick or something, head on a stick, and she's like, I am the guy.
No,
these
I want,
are
no.
the guys now.
No, you got to okay. be in the trenches.
Got it.
For it to be interesting.
So, winds better be long, or we're going to be a Meereen. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you're right.
Something like that.
You're right. That, I mean,
maybe.
It would be wild to expect something different, but just saying.
Anything else?
I'm trying to think if there's anything else in the chapter that we didn't. The only other thing that we didn't really talk about that I wanted to talk about is whether or not you thought she miscarried.
Honestly, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know about her, about the level of that she was bleeding, if maybe that could have been brought on by just her general weariness.
No, because usually, like, women, when they are malnourished,
less.
You just, your period goes away.
Oh, that makes sense.
When you're in traumatic scenarios, that's like something that goes away.
Really? Mm-hmm. Even just like a stressful scenario?
Sometimes people lose their period from stress.
Hmm.
There's lots of different things that is connected to. But so it wouldn't make sense for her to bleed heavier because she was malnourished or something.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really complete my thought, but it wasn't much better. It was just... she was dying or something.
Yeah, no.
And then so her body was giving up or something.
It would go away long before that. So,
you know, I don't think it has to do with the berries. She threw those up, and the diarrhea probably came from the water. Definitely want to read what happened when she had diarrhea, because that was pretty funny. And so she miscarried then. She had to have.
That's what,
so
I
she
mean,
got pregnant from Dario.
Yeah, that's what I think.
And then she...
But the whole thing is she's able to get pregnant.
Hmm.
So to me, it was like this little moment of a flash of what potentially then will be able to come in the future. Like if she's able to bear children.
So Mary was bullshit.
Or the prophecy came true already.
How? Prophecies aren't real, are they?
It depends on the scenario. Like, I don't know in this story what. It is, but there you could be argued that the prophecy. Let me look up the specific prophecy.
The sun rising in the west and setting in the east.
Yeah, it's like something about like the sun could have been Quentin, his house, and he rose and then passed.
Keep going.
Wait, let me look
what?
Up the whole.
What? Come on, people. We only have two books left. Why are you doing this? Why are you doing this?
When the sun rises in the west and sets in the east.
Okay.
When the seas go dry and the mountains blow in the wind like leaves, when your womb quickens again, you bear a living child, then he will return and not before. So there's this idea that Quentin could be the sun that set, passed away.
Yeah.
When the seas go dry, she's in the Dothraki Sea and it's
dying. Okay.
And the mountains blow in the wind like leaves. I don't remember what that has to do. When your womb quickens again and you bear a living child, she miscarried. Then he will return and not before, and she's now back with the Dothraki.
There's the mountain. There's a mountain. There's the wall. That could be that third thing. The mountain's alive, and he's dead. Don't know if that has anything to do with it. Maybe he'll die soon. Blowing in the wind could be a destruction of a large rock formation. Could be the wall falling down doesn't really make sense. The wall's not a mountain. Can you read the last half of that again?
When the sun rises in the west and sets in the east, when the seas go dry and the mountains blow in the wind like leaves, when your womb quickens again and you bear a living child, then he will return and not before.
But she hasn't bore a living child.
But she...
Her womb quickened.
Miscarried.
It quickened, whatever that means.
I think that the technicality of it, depending on, like, she bore a child, but it was a miscarriage. The way I haven't
Why,
been in that situation.
George?
But so anyway, so I just think that was like a really interesting little nod.
Why?
To, I think that, you know, Daenerys, just like a nod to things to come in Winds of Winter. Daenerys is able to bear children. I think that could have implications.
And well, so, I hope it better.
There's no answer to it, and there's like not a lot of information.
That sounds right to me.
But I just felt like that was kind of an interesting little tidbit that was thrown in
there. Well, because earlier it sounded like Mary was just trolling her. Mm-hmm. She was like, oh yeah, when the sun changes its literal astronomical path, and
Drogo's going to come back to you.
Drogo's going to come back to life. So in this scenario, Drogo would represent her ability to conquer, or her love returning,
or she's back with the Dothraki. I don't think she's physically going to come back to life.
Right.
You know,
well, because none of those other things are physically happening either.
No,
why would that?
It's all interpretations.
Yeah,
but
exactly. How does she know? You know, what is up with, and that brings me back to Quaithe. What do they know? What do they want? Why are they doing this? What's going on with the Shy? Tell me why. What is happening?
I love your new hit single.
What do they need? For real, though.
Or are, you know, who of them are intertwined? I'm not sure. But that's, I just, good, like, yeah, I don't like point. The idea. It's like back to what I was saying before. I much prefer the idea that, like, Daenerys is on her own making her decisions and, like, being the leader and doing the things that she wants to do and becoming the person who wants to become, instead of all these different people manipulating her in the background. And I know that she needs to have support and people, and she's not going to be able to do it on her own, but I don't know. I just, like this, it's kind of the same thing of, like, all this magic working in the background to manipulate things happen. Like, these higher planes working that we don't get to see. We only get to see I don't like that much.
Which thing would be the higher plane?
Quaithe and Miri Mazdoor, like all these people working in a different level.
Varys, Littlefinger,
yeah,
Marwyn.
It's like, okay, it's all happening behind closed doors. So cool.
Even Kymron. Less so, but yeah. Okay, yeah. So when do these closed doors come calling for whatever they're looking for,
exactly,
is what I'm saying. Because what are they looking for? House of Black and White. The Pig Boy. I wish that all of you listening were in the room with us right now. I wish that we could all talk about this. You know, I really wish that. I'm really grateful that we've stuck to this project for so long, because it's fun to get something done like this. High five again. To get something done like this. It's been 5 years with this reading order. It's crazy.
Each chapter, a whole episode, like hours long.
We did two chapters for a long time, though.
Yeah, we did. That's true.
I wish we had done each chapter a whole episode, though, because I really like focusing on the one. But I wish that we were able to crowdsource everyone's different perspective.
That's what's been so fun about the last couple episodes, that we've had so many awesome people on with us, because we can kind of just pick their brains about, no disrespect to me picking your brain, because I find you very interesting, but it's nice to kind of get other people's perspectives and opinions on all of this.
For sure.
It's been an exciting way to wrap up.
Yeah, I want to pick their brains too. Yours is
It's
very interesting as well. But it's fun to have more perspectives.
I've enjoyed the last couple episodes big time.
Me too. Yeah. Maybe write in on the internet. Comment on our posts or send us an email. Obviously, we have a lot of questions at the end of this chapter, the last chapter in the reading order. Write into us. We have social media. We have email. We have Patreon. We have OnlyFans. Use one of those platforms and write back to us. If you've listened and you want to help add more
context.
Yeah.
Theories, thoughts, feelings.
To the conversation. Because we can't talk to everyone all at once, but I would really like to know what other people think about a lot of these unanswered questions. This isn't a call for an own because there's no more chapters, but if you're listening and you're hearing this part, if you listen this far in the episode, you'd like to help out a little bit. I think that I just haven't seen or had conversations with anyone. And my friends are people that have shows about these books that are really focused on figuring out what's going on. And no one has said anything. Everything that we've said about Ashaya today is all anyone says. And I just want to know what other theories folks have. I know it's just a story, but there's enough hints all around, and there's geography, and we can pull from the context that this person is an artist in our world that is also inspired by the same sorts of stuff that we're exposed to. So, like, what actually is happening here? We're not going to be able to actually know for sure. But with all these mysteries that are still around, like, I think we can get closer if we share thoughts with each other. And we hear something that we like, we can go, oh, that sounds good to me. And then you start to add that to your own. What kind of ones do you have? Do you have one?
I have one.
All right. I have, I think, four. I've only had one, and no. It hasn't been very good for the last few episodes.
That's true. We're back to the, it's so just you and me, so we're back.
We're back.
Do you want me to go first, or do you want to go first?
You go first.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give my own to Jorah and the, whatever hallucinogen Jorah that we're dealing with in this chapter, where the conversation that they had, specifically this part, when he says, quote unquote, says to her, "You took Marine," he told her, "yet still you lingered to be queen." "You are a queen," her bear said, "in Westeros." "It's such a long way," she complained. "I was tired, Jorah. I was weary of war. I wanted to rest, to laugh, to plant trees and see them grow. I am only a young girl." "No, you are the blood of a dragon." The whispering was growing fainter as if Ser Jorah were falling further and further behind. "Dragons plant no trees. Remember that. Remember who you are. Remember what you were made to be. Remember your words. Fire and blood," Daenerys told the swaying grass. Own to that for many different reasons. One of them being Jorah is all of us saying, "Why are you here for so long?" And two, for just Daenerys's honesty and humanness in that moment. And three, for the reminder that she is fire and blood.
She said to the swaying grass.
I know. Well, you were talking earlier about like the conversations that she's having with the grass, and that's another moment there.
Own to the swaying grass for me also. Though she walked through a green kingdom, it was not the deep, rich green of summer. Even here, autumn made its presence felt, and winter would not be far behind. The grass was paler than she remembered, a wan and stickly green, on the verge of going yellow. "I need to look up wan." After that would come brown. The grass was dying. For all the reasons that we discussed before. Winter. Connection of the storylines of East and West. That this is a global threat that we're all facing.
Right.
Which is important because I feel like this has been so separated from the story. And now that we're reaching the further parts of the series, it's going to be less of a localized issue at the wall or beyond the wall with the people that know about it that we know that they're going to have to face in Westeros. They can't really just go to Essos because winter's coming even here, and they're going to have to deal with it in Carth too.
It's like that further shrinking of the story.
Yes. Own two to Dario's blades hanging on the wall beside Dany's bed.
Yeah.
He's like, "I'm going to leave them here and I will get them back when I return." Yo. Own three. "Once I dreamed of flying," she thought, "and now I've flown and dreamed of stealing eggs." That made her laugh. "Men are mad and gods are madder," she told the grass, and the grass murmured its agreement.
Once again with the grass.
Too good. "To them, these tumble-down stones must loom as huge as the wall of Westeros. The biggest wall in all the world," her brother Viserys used to say, as proud as if he'd built it himself. And George R. R. Martin on diarrhea. Sunset found her squatting in the grass, groaning. Every stool was looser than the one before and smelled fouler. No sound effect for that. By the time the moon came up, she was shitting brown water.
Poor thing.
The more she drank, the more she shat. But the more she shat, the thirstier she grew. And her thirst and her crawling to the stream to suck up more water. The more she drank, the more she shat. The more she shat, the more she grew. No, just, I like the flow of that. When she closed her eyes at last, Dany did not know whether she'd be strong enough to open them again.
Poor thing. I feel for her so bad.
Rough. That's it. Welcome back, everybody, to the future, to the present.
The timelines are a little confusing.
The present.
My favorite part about Owns is that usually, like, I read them beforehand, mm-hmm. and then they kind of...
Write your notes for the show.
Yeah, they kind of get ingrained.
You're like, so that's what happens.
And then I forget about
them. I finally understand.
Right, exactly. Then I forget about it, and then we come to the Owns at the end. It's like, wait a second, I copied that person's idea.
Right, right.
So shout out to y'all.
Shout out to V. Gabe, our first own on the last episode of Feast of Dragons. V. Gabe, V underscore Gabe on Instagram. Own 2, the diarrhea changing colors, heart eye emoji.
The emoji really adds to
oh,
the vibe.
The diarrhea changing colors.
Next on Instagram. So next on Instagram, we've got Brian of Farce who says, own to the ants. That's a big wall and even bigger foreshadowing.
Thanks, Brian. Love that wall of ants. All right. Allie Levine, a.k.a. Quackenbush. I don't know if you want your whole name connected to your username. Sorry about that. Allie Levine on Instagram. Guys, I'm here. Caps. Next message. Don't you love having I am?
Mm-hmm.
You just put a whole bunch of messages in a row, and it seems really important. That's my style. Next from Allie. Thank you, guys, for including my own last episode. Nigh brought a tear to mine eye. I'm sorry I didn't get my own in earlier. I was a little white girl, white claw wasted. I'm going to try that again because it deserves it. I was a little white girl, white claw wasted. I didn't know that it got two new words. I just thought it was white girl wasted.
No. We got the extra. Now you have like, it's a very specific
kind of buzz.
Yeah.
Kind of wasted. Y'all been getting up to some stuff during the pandy. White girl, white claw wasted, a tiddly shmammered, and a ted. I'm happy with my own, but I did throw it together a little hastily. You wrote this message a little hastily there, Allie. Says threw it together with, anyway, Bonifer hastily, if you will. Yes, here's my own. This chapter gets better every time, and it shines a light on so many different possibilities on every reread. This chapter opens a discussion for Danny's apparent miscarriage. Are you listening here? Okay. This chapter opens discussion for Danny's apparent miscarriage and the implications of that for the return of her sun and stars. Her reflection on the poison locust that your girl picked up in 2 seconds flat. The emergency of her identity as a dragon via visions of Viserys, Quaithe, and Jorah. Her near death among the grass, the symbolism in crushing ants that crawl on her, and many, many more. My own of the chapter goes posthumously to Eroa, the slave girl saved by Daenerys and raped by Mago. Not only did she set Daenerys on the path to abolish slavery as the breaker of chains, but her unfortunate rape brought Dany to her first Fire and Blood moment, declaring all the way back in Game of Thrones that Mago and Jago, for what it's worth, would die screaming. The first time I read this chapter, I didn't quite notice it, but Daenerys very specifically sought out the Dothraki, whose leader is now called Jago, whose blood rider is none other than pansy-ass Mago. Myself and many others, having not watched the show, believe Dany is going to full-on Targaryen on Mago with Fire and Blood, fulfilling her promise to Eroa, reclaiming her identity as a true Targaryen, and most likely taking over the Dothraki horde after also KOing Jago and becoming a true Khaleesi. Dany gonna murk Mago so hard, guys. To go forward, she must go back, and that is to her roots and rebirth among the Dothraki. Shout out to George for the beautifully delicate line. She was shitting brown water. I expected something beautifully delicate, and this came right after. I trusted you, but that setup. George for the beautifully delicate line. She was shitting brown water. The more she drank, the more she shat. Simply chef's kiss. Thank you. We all knew that, George. A true gift.
Thanks, Allie.
Thank you for that, Owen.
Next, we've got on Twitter, Straight Savage Cole, who says, my own goes to the throwback to Hedge Knights from the stories Viserys used to tell Dany as a child. I love things that remind me of Westeros and how George slips them in subtly yet with purpose.
We need a new tattoo update, Travis. From Kyburn Crow's Eye on Twitter. Lost because you lingered in a place that you were never meant to be, murmured Zerjoa as softly as the wind. Alone because you sent me from your side. You know, thank you for that, Owen Kyburn Crow's Eye. It's a bit through the filter of his perspective, don't you think, Jorah? Right? He's a bit
biased.
He's a bit biased.
100%.
It just seems like he's like, I got it figured out. And every reason has to do with him.
Right.
It doesn't seem likely to me.
It's very self-centered because he's got this. Just miss your microphone.
My bad.
He's got this idea that he's the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he is the guy.
Does he really think he's the guy, or is he just desperate?
I think he just is in his mind, like in his daydreams, in his mind, he's the guy.
He's definitely at the very end of it all, no matter what's going on, not self-aware enough to not say that.
Right.
Not to realize everything that what he's saying is about him.
That's the...
About her whole problem.
That's the poor... what's the word? It sucks that we're in his thoughts, basically.
What do you mean?
Like, it's bad luck for him that we get to read his thoughts the reader, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Good luck for all of us.
Because there's a lot of unfiltered things in there that would not shine a good light on any of us.
Right. All right. I think we're maybe a little bit too hard on Dora then.
Next, from email. Valar Morghulis, y'all. My first own for A Feast with Dragons and just in time. Welcome to the party. My own for Daenerys 10 goes to Daenerys herself, a fascinating figure whose character arc shows the perils and consequences of leadership in spite of mostly good intentions in a way that so far in the books has felt authentic, grounded, and with a fear of inevitable tragedy. Just because you're doing things for the right reasons doesn't mean that things are going to turn out the way you want them to, or that the consequences won't be severe for those whom harm you seek to mitigate. Second own, I can cheat because it's Pride Month. It was Pride Month. To Drogon, who saves so much money on takeout and never has to do their dishes. From Akash of the Andals.
The life we all want to leave, Akash. Yeah. Or lead, Akash. And our next email from Allison. I was at the end of A Clash of Kings in February when I discovered A Game of Owns. I've listened to every chapter episode since then. Awesome. Also, sorry, as I read through A Storm of Swords, A Feast for Crows, and A Dance with Dragons, I am so surprised I made it to the end before you released the final chapter. What up? It's been so great listening to Zach, Hannah, Micah, Eric, Kate, and Selena. Own to Daenerys for keeping her shit together. Well, Allison, shit did not stay together in this chapter. I would have planted myself on that rock with my dragon and waited for death. Dany got blisters on both feet from walking and giggled about it. She bucked up and stood in front of the Dothraki smelling like diarrhea. I'm very impressed with her will to persevere. Let that be a lesson to all of you. I added that last part in, Allison.
I'm sure the sentiment would ring true with Allison.
Just the diarrhea smell and the respect that came with it. Not that that's relative. I'm moving on.
Next up, we've got Mike from England, who says, well, I pulled a late one to make sure I made it in time this time around, and we'll probably regret it tomorrow morning, but it's the finale. Sorry, Mike, we played you dirty on that one. Right off the bat, this is my first time reading this chapter, and this has just become one of my all-time favorites. From the first sentence to the last one, I just felt like I've been pulled into a dreamlike state. It was super strange. I've not felt this before, but I felt like I was there watching as a bystander lost in this crazy, faraway place.
Are you listening, George?
George definitely leans into this whole dreamlike feel a lot into this chapter. It really emphasizes Dany losing her touch, even down to the small details. I need a hat, she said aloud. Such a small thing, but she's speaking to herself out loud in the middle of nowhere. She's definitely losing the plot, and my mind was down for the whole ride. Furthermore, she hears many voices throughout this chapter and even has a whole conversation with her brother in the wind. This is all just adding to the fact that she is hallucinating. However, in this story, when people dream, it's often prophecy. Another thing I loved was the nostalgia. Maybe because you guys have this as the last chapter in your reading order, I'm even more nostalgic looking back, but the emotions you feel. The grass is as tall as she was. It never seemed so high when I was mounted on my silver, riding beside my sun and stars at the head of this Khalasar. I was straight up tripping reading this chapter, maybe because I'm tired, but George just captured a feeling in a bottle for me. Being lost far from home is a dream I think most of us have had, and I, for one, really enjoyed going along for the ride.
For the love of God, George had to include that shitting bit, didn't he? Ever the prankster, I wish I was brave enough to give this my own. But it did give me one hell of a laugh. Why don't you want to read this, Hannah? Sunset found her squatting in the grass, groaning. Every stool was looser than the one before and smelled fouler. By the time the moon came up, she was shitting brown water. The more she drank, the more she shat. But the more she shat, the thirstier she grew, and her thirst sent her crawling to the stream to suck up more water. There's a tune in there. Now that's comedy gold.
Now time for my own. Appreciate you tag teaming this one with me.
All good.
Now this one is tough, but I'm going to give it to George, actually. He does someone in this chapter that he really... He does... Sorry. Time for my own. Now this one is tough, but I'm going to give it to George, actually. He does something in this chapter that he rarely ever does. He gives us information about the characters to us, the reader, directly, almost like God himself. It reads, Marine was not her home and never would be. It was a city of strange men with strange gods and stranger hair, of slavers wrapped in frinked togars where grace was always earned through whoring, butchery was art, and dog was a delicacy. Marine would always be the Harper City, and Daenerys could not be a harpy. I found this line so interesting, as he clearly would have used another narrative tool here and let the wind say this, but he doesn't. He straight up tells us how it is, and it's so out of the blue. I love it. This is probably dragged on for too long by this point. My apologies. Hope you guys are doing well. Can't believe it's the end of the reading order. What's next for you guys? As an avid listener, I would like to know what's the plan. Stay tuned. Mike from the drunken land we call England.
Mike, that was beautiful.
It was a great own.
Thank you.
That it was a little essay, and I mean that in the best beautiful. Way possible.
That was beautiful. Yeah, this, I mean, the way that you feel whenever you come to points in the story throughout it are the whole point that we read these books and we enjoy it. That's like the mental / physical experience, because it's physical. You get excited in some ways. At least you're holding the book sometimes, so it's at least heavy. But we go through it. And it's all good, usually, if we like the whole book. But then there's points of it like this, where he's talking about it, like it's sticking out and having its own characteristics. Like the
messes
whole,
you up a little.
Exactly. Like he's feeling, he's getting his levers pulled. We're getting our levers pulled as we read the story the whole time in different directions. But this one specifically, like, as a flavor that he's like, oh, this is neat. Mm-hmm. This is neat.
Yeah.
That's one thing I love about Song of Ice and Fire, that we have all these opportunities to explore these separate flavors that he finds interesting, that the author finds interesting, channeled through this aesthetic and through these characters that we really like. And it's just, but these, the number of chapters, the number of books, the number of things happening, and most importantly, the number of POVs, all these opportunities, man. And, you know, as we talked about in this reading order, things like the mysterious setting at the Purple Lotus in Marine, and of course everything Vic's doing on his ship, and the list goes on. Things that we did in the earlier parts of the book that are just so quintessentially summing up these genres that we really like through characters that we think are interesting while they're finding out these mysteries that are precious to finding out how the story mechanically works, because we don't even know how it's going to mechanically work. We don't know the mechanics behind whatever magic might be potentially associated with Dragonbinder, the Wall, the White Walkers, Old Town, the list goes on. We've talked about this a bunch. You guys know.
We're still in early days when it comes to the magic.
Yeah. Cool owns, though. Thank you for the owns, everyone, and great emails.
We love hearing from you.
Yeah, we love hearing from you. This was really fun.
The owns won't, obviously, it's ingrained in our name, go away when we start our next project. And so if you want to send in your own, whether you didn't have a chance to send in your own from one of these chapters before and you want to get it in now, or you kind of want to look ahead for what we're going to do next, you can find us on Game of Owns on Twitter, on Instagram, or contact at gameofowns.com if you have more thoughts than a couple of characters.
Your next chapter, Aegon's Conquest. Let us know.
We're diving in.
What you think? Okay. All right, back.
I know we say this every chapter, but this chapter is one worth rereading 1,000,000%. It just, for all of your owns and just the vibes of this chapter, A+, really set the tone. And so I know that we always say that, but I just feel like in this chapter in particular, it's vibes only.
Thanks to everybody for listening to our conversation today. Thanks for giving us a reason to sit and to dedicate a couple hours to talking about a thing that we have already read and wanted to read again. And glad that you've joined us in this adventure of going through the story again. And hope
this
that you will
journey.
Yeah, and this whole journey. We hope that you will continue to explore books that you like too. And if you are interested in continuing to explore Song of Ice and Fire, we're not going to stop.
I was going to say, that sounded very final. Like, we're not going anywhere. Yeah. We just finished A Feast with Dragons. Yeah. So.
And really grateful that you're here. Like I said, giving us a reason to do this. And you can let us know what you think about all the stuff on our channels.
You can find us on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram, on Patreon by searching for Game of Owns. Or you can send us an email to contact@gameofowns.com. And if you want to check out the reading order, if you haven't had the chance to, now's a good time. You can find that at feastwithdragons.com. This isn't the end of Game of Owns. We'll be back.